Welcome to Geeks of the North, a hobby and gaming podcast in the Dolph of Angus. We're here to paint some miniatures and talk about the hobby, so why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome once again to Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here, yet again, with the infallible Antoine Bergeron.
I'm not sure what that word means.
Infallible?
Yeah.
As in, you're not fallible. You don't make mistakes. You're
okay, yeah, okay. Yep.
I tricked the Frenchie. Ha-ha.
Yeah, you did.
How's it going tonight, Antoine?
Oh, doing good, you?
Oh, good. It'd be doing better for me if I'd found something to actually work on during our hobby show. I got all this stuff like airbrushing I need to do, and all, you know, things I don't really want to do while on mic. You know, or clean a bunch of models from Steamforged. That's also not very fun, so I don't have the energy for that.
So, you're just going to talk?
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'll unbox models while we talk. Let me reach over here. That was not me.
Nope, that wasn't me.
That was Antoine hitting his thing. I'm the one doing all the moving, and he's the one hitting stuff. Again. What are you doing?
I'm just moving. I don't know how I did it twice.
Yeah, I'm totally not editing that out, by the way. So the fans will know how clumsy you are.
I need to pay for my mistakes.
That's right. Shame. Shame. Yeah. So I'm going to unbox some blacksmiths. And I'll stare at them and wonder where it all went wrong.
Live podcast unboxing. So interesting.
Well, exactly. It's like a video unboxing, except without the core component. So, yeah, that's going to be my hobby time. What are you working on tonight, Antoine?
I was going to clean a model, but it needs filing, and that's going to make too much noise.
Yeah, please don't pull a Yom.
Yeah, on the recording, so she will have to wait. It was a veteran gutter.
So did I get you thinking about her because I spoke about her today?
No, she was already on my next list. It was either her or Fillet. So Fillet, because I would get a second captain and be able to change my team more.
You'd never play her anyway.
Yeah, that's why, because she's not painted. She's not even on a base. And veteran gutter because I really want to paint the model. So
yeah,
the model one.
I mean, I was talking about today. I don't even have butchers, but I was thinking about buying her from my union team, just because she's a better sculpt than the original tiny gutter that I have.
That's not and that I, hard to be a better sculpt than the old the old gutter.
That's true. I mean, there are worse in the range. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
A lot of the original models are pretty hard to deal with. Especially the Union models. There's a lot of, like, stinkers in there. I'm looking at you, Fangtooth.
He has his charm.
If you say so.
Yeah, so instead of doing that, I'll be finishing the Right, Knights models I started in January.
Yeah, I should do that eventually too. But I don't know when I'm going to have time to play Relic Knights. Maybe at Captain Con I'll play in an event with you, if they have one again this year. We can both go fully painted and amaze everyone.
My army was half-painted last time, and it amazed people, so...
It's because your bases were so nice.
Yeah, I know, it was on the base.
I laughed about that. It's so true, but so funny. And there's nothing wrong with that. Like, the bases really drew the eye.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal.
The bright purple, zenithal shaded.
Oh, yeah, and the base, for sure.
Yeah, like, my paladins... not the paladins, but the... What's their name? The guy with the jump packs. They were just genital shaded and had their base done. That's it. They had no other work done and people didn't even notice. So.
Well, it's because they're so used to not seeing anything done on them. Right? That's not a shot at anyone. That's just we are the exception, not the rule, I think, for people that, you know, insist on playing painted and stuff. I don't think it's as common as we would like.
Well, I think it depends the types of games and the game settings. Like, I think we see more of the unpainted because of the crazy tournament people who play War Machine and Guild Ball. And those scenes are so motivated to go for the tournament effect that painting is less of a requirement for them.
Well, doesn't Guild Ball have full...
No, no longer.
Is it still the weird hybrid rules?
Yeah, the weird hybrid rules. And it's up to the TOs, so nobody
enforces it.
Enforces it except
WTC or something.
Yeah, the big ones. So,
I mean, I don't understand why people don't paint Guild Ball. It's 12 models.
Yeah, but people switch guilds, sell stuff, buy stuff.
Like the
tournaments. Oh, I know. It's not like yeah. It's not me you need to convince. But
yeah, I know.
When I look at other people or other games, more narrative games, people paint more.
I mean, look at Steve. Steve is, you know, the friendliest whack player we know.
Mm-hmm.
And he lives for tournaments.
Yeah.
But I've never seen him play unpainted. And I don't think he particularly draws any joy out of the painting.
Nope.
But he doesn't mind it, but it's not why he plays the games.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know how much of that comes from playing with us who all have our stuff painted too. But he also, like, the experience is not into 2D terrain, so he's kind of in the middle, I think.
That could be.
Yeah.
I have no idea how to get these bozos off their bases. I wonder if I can just cut the bottoms of the bases off. And
I think that's what you have to do, or...
cut right through the peg holes, or the pegs, so I can pull the things through.
Yeah, or use the... Isn't there some glue unbonder or something like that? I don't know if it will work on that kind of glue.
I'd have to be able to see where the glue is, I would assume, to unbind it.
And the glue might be just in the peg, so...
Yeah. I do see, however, why people complain about these friggin' models. My god. The flash.
Oh yeah? That bad?
Oh yeah.
So, the box is open. Or your initial impressions?
Well, I got both boxes open. All the models are here in front of me. The details are kind of soft. They're not bad. Some models took detail better than others. I'm looking at, I think his name is Anvil, the big guy with the shield.
Yep.
The whole reason I bought the set. His face is pretty well detailed. Yeah, his body came out pretty well. But his details are all larger because he's larger.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the material worked well for this. Other models with more delicate details, they're kind of soft. They're a little shallow. They're not bad. I definitely think with the, you know, some painting and some lining, you can make them pop and they'll be okay. But I'm looking right now at, like, the one I picked up and I was like, ooh, he's their striker guy.
Alloy.
Yeah, I think that's the one. He's got the axe and the dagger and he's kind of like in a running jumping pose thing off of a block. He's got 1 foot on a block.
Yeah, the kind of a ninja blacksmith.
Yeah, exactly. That's the one. And he's got some fairly robust bold lines.
Oh.
Was that politically correct?
Mm-hmm.
I can be diplomatic. I'm totally going to use robust mold lines somewhere else, though, because I think that's too good to give up. So I would say that most models don't have such problems, or at least... Most of the ones I've looked at so far. The ones that have mold lines, oh boy, do they have mold lines. But the other ones seem pretty good. I'm making it through the pile here, and I'm not, I don't want to vomit inside my mouth, so...
That's a pretty good thing.
Well, that's farther than some people have gotten. There have been some pretty nasty comments about the mold lines on these guys. My acquaintance of mine, Yann Falange, mentioned at one point that he'd unboxed them. He'd started cleaning one model and gave up on them at one point. Like a while back. Though I think right now he's back on board because, one, they're supposed to be really good, and two, season 4 just launched, so he's full steam ahead. Yeah. Overall, not bad. Not bad.
You've seen some of the other plastic. How do they compare?
Okay. So here's the thing. I don't know if QC got better or what, because I've seen other blacksmiths, and it seems to me I recall far more mold lines than this.
Oh, okay. So
I would put these right now, I'd say, on par with the farmers I've seen, which is pretty good because it's quite clean, and I think these are cleaner than my Falconers are. So no, I'm fairly impressed. I mean, like I said, the details are soft. This is basically board game plastic. Yes, it's a highly detailed model, so, you know, far more so than you'd find in a board game normally. But the material is pretty much the same. So you gotta have reasonable expectations. Like I said, some details are kind of soft, others are okay. It seems to vary model to model. There's some parts of the aesthetic I don't like. Like the guy that seems to have a furnace for a backpack.
Yeah, the guy that's called Furnace.
I don't know. Is he called Furnace? That could be. I don't know their names. He's, I think he's Cinder's master.
I think that's... I'm not sure.
He's also the dead guy. I believe he's dead now in the fluff. Well, you know how Steamforge likes to launch things and then kill them right away?
Yep.
I mean, didn't Thresher die before he was even released?
Yes. One of the farmer captain died before release.
I mean, that's hardcore. That's
well, hardcore. Didn't Snakeskin too? Didn't she die in the first book?
Yeah.
So she died on release.
Yeah, I think she died in the first book. Corsair lost his leg during the fluff of the first book.
During the beginning intro fluff before getting to the rules.
Yeah.
But Corsair lost his leg while he was not a playable model.
Yeah, he didn't exist?
No. It was just on the fluff. He came in the second book.
Yeah, he came in season 2 when Shark retired because the fish had a horrible season. So they got Corsair back.
And once again, we're doing Geese of the North and we're only talking Guildball.
That's true. We should stop that and leave something for the other show. It's because it's what I'm working on, right? So
yeah, like, for sure.
Yeah. And yeah, I'm sure the listeners cross over or something, if we have any. Yeah, so I got these guys I'm working on. I got a bunch of bases for them. I don't know if I got enough bases.
Number-wise or the size?
Well,
they have a lot of 40 mils, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. They have 5 40 mils. I got 4, so I had to order another package. Ah. And they have 6 32 mils, or 30 mils, I should say. I think I have 2 packages, which is 10, so I should be okay. And I have the 150 for Ferris, so that's fine. Yeah. She should be okay. As soon as I forgot how to get them off their bases. People are like, yeah, drill, clip, exacto. I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a lot of work. Like, I'm half tempted to be like, leave them on their bases. Why, yes, I can do that.
That's an option. You can just add to it.
Oh, what is this adding you speak of? Is that what you mean by flock?
Yeah, that's fine. That's enough. Aren't they already textured or something?
Yeah, you know what irritates me, though, is that they're textured, but there's giant holes around their feet where there's no texture.
That's where you put the flock?
Yeah, to everyone's standing in little patches of grass. Wait. This is the 2000s, man. Tufts. Self-adhesive tufts. Yeah. Static grass and flock is like old school. Next thing, I'll get my goblin green out and paint the edges of the base.
It's always an option.
Man, old school armies are hilarious.
Yeah.
Like, super fluorescent colors, like crazy bright. I gotta love it. Got to love it. All right. Yeah, so...
what did you work on during the week? Outside of getting those boxes?
I've done nothing hobby-wise. No? So I finished painting my last Union model last show, I think.
Mm-hmm. Or it was almost done, I think.
Well, I think I only started her last show. So I think I started and almost finished her, and then I finished her just after the show, after we finished recording. Then now she can sit on my shelf for the rest of the season.
What was that, Minx?
That was Minx.
Isn't she good? Or maybe just not in Union? Or?
So the problem is that we have too many good models.
Oh, yeah.
And the general consensus is she's one of the ones that stays at home. Along with Fangtooth, who I also thought was really good. And what's the other one most people leave? Either Grace or... Oh, Snakeskin. Yeah.
Well, Snakeskin you were already down on.
Yeah, well, it just doesn't seem to really fit all that well. You know, it's not a matter of being down so much as just not sure what she's supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
So, now listen to one of the big Union players in the UK. He has a podcast called Singled Out, and I listened to him today. And he was listing, like, the models that make it into his 12. And, yeah, when he said Fangtooth wasn't one, I was like, it kind of struck a chord because I love the model. Well, I love what he does, but I played him. So in games, I went to a tournament last weekend. We did a tournament in Montreal for the launch of Season 4 for Guild Ball. And I played Union. And I played Fangtooth every game because I love him so much. But every game, he just didn't seem to do as much as I'd hoped. And he's a pretty big target. Like, he's got Gluttonous Mass, or Resilience is called now, and he's not the complete victim he was in Season 3. Pardon me. But he's still a big guy. He's still relatively easy to hit and beat on and you know, farm for momentum. And he didn't do the gobs of damage I was hoping he would do.
Well, no.
Well, I mean, he did good damage in one game. A lot of times he's just a good deterrent and he's annoying.
Yeah, with the terrain and resilience, that's kind of a pain to deal with.
Yeah. But he's only a 1-inch melee. And if he's not pounding someone, well, he's not bringing a whole heck of a lot to the team. There's no utility there.
Mm.
So, like, I was questioning my choice in bringing him at the end of the day.
Already, and that
And then this is podcast, and the guy's like, I really like him, he's really good, but I don't really think he fits anywhere. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of what I felt. Because I think if you want to play a pure raw beater team, Union is not what you should be playing. They're okay. They're good beaters, but I think Fangtooth doesn't fit necessarily in their style.
Mm-hmm. But isn't that what the veteran trade is? Or the team he plays with? Isn't that what he wants? Raw beater?
He wants to beat people.
But that's not the kind of model he wants to do it with.
Yeah, I think there's just better choices. Because the thing is, I think playing for 6 takeouts... is not necessarily a good idea with that team. I think you'll clock yourself because there's huge dice pools and a lot of dice and a lot of like modifiers and stacking the buffs and so you lose a lot of time calculating dice pools and rolling dice, and it doesn't seem like a lot, but you add it up over a number of attacks over X number of turns of a game.
Yeah.
So it just became, I think it's just become less optimal to do it that way. And I find, like, if I take Fangtooth, I'm leaving, again, we're turning this into a Guild Ball podcast, but I leave out other important models like Decimate in order to take Fangtooth.
Yeah.
And Decimate's super fast. Doesn't require momentum to be super fast. She's only 1-inch melee, but she has second wind. She's got, good low momentous damage.
She feels holes that he doesn't.
Yeah. Oh. Mm. We shall see. Anyway, so I went to a tournament, played a lot of games. Well, played 3 games, 3 rounds. Came in second place. Barely beat out Yom, who had the same score as me, but I think I had a slightly better strength of schedule. It was fun. I was enjoyed it. Played, who did I play? I played our buddy Antoine. I played another friend of ours, Danielle, with his morticians. And Daniel's so funny because he's a good War Machine player, and you'd think that would kind of translate to Guild Ball, but he'll say to himself that it doesn't, because he was making like very obvious mistakes. Like at one point, he'd lined himself up for a goal, and I couldn't get to the model that had the ball. There was no way to stop it, and he had one momentum left. And on his activation before he scored the goal, during my turn, I attacked someone and he used his last momentum to like
counterattack. Oh no, I forgot.
And then he went to go to, I can't score because I don't have any momentum and I've got no one else to activate because it was the last activation of the turn.
Oh, that sucks.
It's like, or on the first turn, he you know, I kick the ball, it lands where I want to land, he runs up and retrieves it. But forgets to run back because he picked it up with Vet Hemlock, and she has an ability that lets her do a like an extra jog or something.
Yep.
He forgot to do it. He left influence on her for it, but didn't do it, and then flipped the clock over to me. So I went and stole the ball with Mist, and he's like, "Oh yeah, she's not supposed to be there. I was supposed to run back with the ball or pass it back." I'm like, okay, sorry. And like we'd be doing so, and I'm like, okay. He's like, that model's got a 6-inch move, right? I'm like, well, he's got a 6-inch move, but he's got a 2-inch shadow like, so he'd like a 2-inch move at the beginning of his activation, and then he's got 2 inches of reach, so it's more like 10 inches of threat. Yeah, yeah. Measure 6 inches. Okay, I'll stay just out of 6 inches. I'm like, yeah, but he's got a 2-inch dodge, and then a 6-inch move, and then 2-inch reach. Yeah, yeah, 6 inches. Okay, got it. Okay, so he flips over the clock. I'm like, is this some weird kind of trick? Like you're trying to lure me into something? Like I don't see it. So okay, I'll go in. He's like, oh, I didn't think about the dodge or the 2-inch, like, reach. Like,
but, it was but so funny because he didn't listen to you.
I'm like, but I mentioned it. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, okay. It was a super fun game. It was very one-sided. He did manage to kill my captain.
Oh, that's good. And
for those that play Guild Ball, he managed to do it with Casket, so he Casket timed me.
Oh, he did it. Didn't you suffer that from Steve, too?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so you got 4 VPs, I think, for that. So I won 12-4. But that was after I'd failed a snapshot goal.
Oh.
So I didn't activate that model and heal him first because I should have been able to win, and I flubbed it. Yeah. Needing to roll 2 fours on 4 dice, or 2 fours or more, right, on 4 dice, and I didn't succeed. Yay.
Yeah, that anyway, happens.
Super fun game. And then I played Steve, and it was I was really, really down on it.
Didn't you play Yom at the end?
No, I have not played Yom.
Oh, okay, you played Steve, not Yom. Okay.
Yeah, I played Steve, and I had a hard time. Like, Steve's team is soul-sucking. He's playing Morticians, and it's just the way they play now is very, very annoying to deal with. And I'm also, like, out of gas at this point. Because it's only a 3-round tournament, so it's in theory super easy.
But it's Guild Ball. Those are intense games.
Yeah. So, I'm kind of, like, half dead, and Steve can see it. So, at one point, he's like, you know, I do something. He's like, you shouldn't do that. You should move here instead and do this and that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Which basically led to him giving up a goal. And after that, I was a bit more into it and stuff. But yeah, it's, I like the game. It's a big learning curve because every model can do so many things, but I like the game. So I think that was all I did last week for gaming. I didn't get a chance to go out to our gaming night, so them's the breaks. Aside from that, hobby-wise, printed a bunch of, terrain for stuff, and then the printer broke. So, or actually one of my printers broke, so I fixed that. I have printed out, probably enough terrain for Zone Mortalis now.
Oh yeah.
I've got tons of sections of stuff. I haven't printed out the tiles yet, just the wall pieces.
Yeah, yeah. I knew we were talking about it and you did the test print, but I didn't know you continued.
Oh yeah, I've just been printing stuff. I've probably got, I don't know, 20 wall sections now or 20 pieces of various shapes and sizes.
Another reason why you should be painting 40K right now.
Yeah, but they're airbrushed, so.
Oh yeah, okay. So
I can't really do it.
Can do it on the show.
I've got my test yellow guy. He's yellow.
We should share that if you take a quick peek at the with the show notes.
Ah!
Oh, no longer out with this guy.
Yeah, I got him. It's okay. I got him. Sorry for the listeners who had to hear me scream like a little girl. Yeah. Well, he's just yellow. I haven't done anything on him.
Oh, okay.
I did some lining to kind of see if I liked the yellow and how I was going to, like, just kind of see where he would go and see if I liked him.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also gloss varnished because I was doing lining. Like, so until I matte coat him.
Idea for pictures.
You know, lens flare. Like the Michael Bay miniature. How about you? What you been working on?
Not much. I've painted Tenderizer since last week. I finished yesterday.
Wow. Sorry, I'm just looking at the time, realizing I feel like Yom. Like 30 minutes of Paul Hobby where I don't really talk about anything. Okay. Go, Antoine. Half the show is done. So yeah, Tenderizer came out amazing, by the way.
Yeah, I went fast. So I'm really happy with my speeds now for the
pieces. Because they're
pretty high level. They're not to the same level I did Ox and the first couple of models, Ox and Briskets. But they're pretty high anyway. And I think they tie well together. And they take less than a week to do, which for me is pretty good. I don't have really long painting sessions. And when I paint, I'm usually distracted. So that's a good speed for me.
Darn those children and wives.
Oh, and Netflix shows and stuff like that. It's the only free time I have really is my evenings, so multitasking is not productive.
That's what they tell me.
Yeah. And I did cleaning, which is not super fun hobby-wise, but that's cleaning in the hobby room to be able to start working on what I was doing right before we started recording. I'm doing a commission for 3D Wargaming. That's a local guy who do 3D files for historical models. So I'm doing his showpieces. Painting his showpieces. So I was doing some prep for them, and I'll start to airbrush and base coats probably after the show or tomorrow. So this time it's planes. Last time I painted tanks. So right now we're going to World War II planes. Starting with the Zero, and I don't remember the names of the other stuff. But there will be, I think, an handful of models.
Yeah, I've actually got to print the Zero and do a time-lapse video for him.
Yeah, that's true. You did a time-lapse for him for another of the models I painted, too, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, for the T-34, I think, from last Kickstarter.
Yeah, the Russian model. Yeah.
So hopefully this time it's less of a pain.
Yeah, you had a problem last time?
Well, the problem was trying to find a way to time-lapse that would look good, that would do... Because he wanted it HD, like 1080p.
Mm.
And most of the time-lapsing software, it's like, why would you ever want to do that?
Like, don't do that for HD.
Yeah. If I had, like, a GoPro or something, it would probably work better, but I wasn't using that.
Mm-hmm.
So, the main thing's a little slower going.
So I'm doing those, and that's about it. I had no games, and that's it. Not much on my side. It took time, but I don't have a number of projects under my belt for this week. This one, I'm super happy with him, but just one.
Yeah, well, that makes up for my super long-winded ramble about nothing, so... There you go.
Just the intro, we talked about Guild Ball in general, and you talked about the... We did our audio unboxing.
Oh.
That was not your hobby, but it still was part of the time. So don't compare yourself to Yom yet.
Wow, poor Yom. Gotta get to dig in there every episode. I almost feel bad.
You're going to say almost.
Well, I said I almost feel bad. I said it once.
There wasn't enough emphasis on the...
Yeah. Oh. I'm sure Yom can feel it anyway. Feel the burn.
Yeah, sadly, that's all. I wasn't able to play over the weekend. And I couldn't... The timing didn't work with the other meetings for the or evenings games, so it didn't work out. And I sadly think it's going to be the same this week. So next week will also be short.
Say it isn't so, Antoine.
Busy weekends and no times during the day, so can't attend the tournaments. So I miss you all, guys. That would have been fun. I would have really liked to be there.
Yeah, we could have had a second butcher player killing us all. There was
I tried to score goals with my butchers, at least. Shane doesn't butter himself with that.
Yeah, goals are for lesser men. I will say he is a super pleasant fellow. I didn't get the pleasure of playing him, but he seems a very pleasant individual, and everyone who played him seemed to have a good time, despite getting their butts kicked. So that's always nice, you know. If you can lose and still have fun, yeah, you're doing okay.
Yep, totally agree with that.
Because ultimately, it is a game, and in theory, we should be having fun. At least that's what I'm told.
That's what you try to tell. We say we try to say.
Yeah, exactly. That's our official stance. It's supposed to be fun. we don't guarantee fun, but it's supposed to be fun. All right. Is that everything? Do you have?
That's everything.
That's it. Yeah.
On our hobby side. So.
Okay, so I guess main topic, do we want to go with the one we discussed, or do we have...
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So, I was browsing the miniature-related web, as I often do this week, and I stumbled across a post by, I think the name of the company is Durgan Paintforge.
Yes, that's it.
And he has a line of custom miniatures, really cool-looking stuff, you should go check it out.
And we already mentioned it in the past in the news show.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic cartoony dwarves.
Yes. And he had some issues with his Kickstarter. And it just got me thinking about how different companies handle things differently. So he had all kinds of fulfillment problems that were out of his control. And he was so racked with guilt about it all that it was causing him to, like, not sleep at night, and he was having issues.
Yeah, anxiety.
Close
to depression. So that's not fun when you try to do something for a fun project and it turns to that.
Yeah. And it was basically all because he felt enormous guilt over the fact that, you know, even though he wasn't delivering on time, and it wasn't really his fault, he felt responsible. And, like, he'd let everyone down. Now, what's good about this is that during the whole time... Well, what's good about it? Let me rephrase that. What makes this a positive story is how he dealt with that situation, right? He was very open with people, and I'm sure there were people that were angry. He said that, in his post, he said for the most part, everyone was very understanding and was just happy that he was keeping them in the loop,
mm-hmm.
so that they knew what was going on.
Yeah, that's a major problem with some Kickstarter.
And that's what got me thinking about this as a topic, right?
Yep.
Kickstarter has become a key component of the miniature gaming industry. Actually, let's be honest, it's just a key component of the gaming industry in general now. A lot of these companies are smaller companies. They don't have the capital they need to start new projects. And some of them are bigger companies, and why would they want to spend their own capital when they can get pre-orders, essentially, to fund projects and build new product?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you look at people like Cool Mean or Not, and their whole business model now really revolves around Kickstarters and new product launches.
Everything that has plastic minis from them passed through Kickstarter. They do, however, produce some board games outside of Kickstarter, but that's mostly their cardboard-only projects.
Yeah. And I'm not trying to say good or bad. You know, I'm not trying to... because I've been pretty vocal about that before. I tend to be a Debbie Downer when it comes to big companies using Kickstarter to do pre-sales.
Mm-hmm.
But on the whole, say what you want, they fulfill their Kickstarters, you get the product, and generally speaking, you're getting what you pay for, right? I don't think there's been any super horrible CMON projects in recent history.
Oh, recently, no. Everything has gone pretty well.
Yeah, you know, and I think the projects that most famously went wrong, that company is no longer using CMON as a publisher, so.
Yeah, it was a partnership and not just them, so.
Yep. So it got me thinking, you know, there's proper ways to handle Kickstarter belts, so, like, as users, we should properly manage expectations, right? I think we've all forgotten what Kickstarter was originally supposed to be, simply because no one uses it that way anymore. Or bigger companies don't use it that way anymore, right?
Yeah.
It was supposed to be a crowdfunding resource with no guarantee of getting anything, right?
Yep. It was for ideas.
Now, you'd pledge, but there was never a guarantee you were going to get product. And now we've turned it into a fancy pre-order system. And ultimately it leads to a lot of heartache. As things don't ship on time, things don't ship at all, projects fail. And then we scream scammer and scoundrel. But I really wonder sometimes if it's just a case of us not managing our expectations properly.
I think a big part of that is that so many big companies use it that way that we expect all projects to be of the same level.
Right. And I think that's exactly my point. You know, we look at Durgan. I don't know the gentleman's name, the owner, but he wrote a very interesting series of blog posts about his journey with his Kickstarter.
Yeah, his postmortem blog series.
And one of the things he talks about is how, you know, Kickstarter works very well, but it works especially well for large multi-million-dollar corporations who don't really need it. And that for people his size, it's so easy to run into problems. Like, because he was very careful who he partnered with, like for manufacturing and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And still, you know, his manufacturing partner took on too many contracts, so then subcontracted to someone who was far less reliable, right? And who was shipping inferior product, which cost him money and time.
The guy did his due diligence, did his research, did some tests, had deals, and it's those that failed.
Yeah. And the thing is, if when it all went bad, right, and he got the first set of miniatures and it was terrible, and then he asked him to recast and he got the second set of miniatures, they're still terrible. Like, he could have just called it quits there and shipped what he had because, you know, it's outside of his control. He didn't have to go back, ask for a third set, you know. And in fact, the fact that he did and the fact that the caster admitted that, yeah, you know, I subcontracted and the quality controls kind of got out the window. So, you know, I'll cast them myself in-house as fast as I can to make sure you get your third production is right. You know, that's great the caster did that. But it's also great that the owner of Durgan, you know, kept going to bat and kept that you know, forcing and fighting, and it caused all kinds of problems. It caused shipping delays. It cost him a ton of money in shipping because he decided to ship what he had just so he could get something out to people.
Yeah,
because he was worried that people would think he was, you know, trying to run some elaborate scam, and just for his own satisfaction because he felt so guilty about the delays.
Yeah, because that was not the only delay. He had problem with the 3D masters. He had problem with the casting qualities of the final piece. He had a series of bad looks.
Yeah, and it says a lot about him as a person.
Yep.
That he went so far. You know, and then it got me thinking about how harsh I've been in the past to other Kickstarters. Because here we have a case of someone who did everything he could to make sure his Kickstarter was successful and smoothly run and everyone would get everything in a timely manner. and it still all went to poop, right? Yeah. And anyone who's listened to the show in the past has probably heard me complain more than once about Soda Pop and their Kickstarters and the delays and the, you know, the not fulfilling.
Yep.
Maybe I've been unfair. It's a possibility. Then again, I think the big difference here is the level of communication. I'll be honest, I don't follow the Soda Pop Super Dungeon Kickstarter stuff. Are you okay?
Yep.
Okay. Follow it that closely. But I know there are huge issues.
The communication have stopped. That's about it.
Wasn't that the official status? Was like, we're not going to talk about it anymore because we just get lambasted no matter what we say?
Yes.
Like, how is that an answer? Well, it's an answer. I think it's just a poor one, right?
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the right one either, but that's their choice.
To play devil's advocate for them, they did communicate well at the start. And even when the first hurdles came in, but it has been piling up and commission went hurry over the project. And now they fully stopped communicating. But it was good for a while. And even for a long time. But the projects is... Most of their projects are so long overdue now that
what goodwill they've earned is gone?
Goodwill they earned, yeah. Goodwill is gone now.
Oh, that's unfortunate. See, like I said, I haven't followed it. But I have to wonder if our expectations are also partially to blame. I mean, yeah, you're spending $100 on a game or whatever. It's not an insignificant amount of money. Let's face it, most of the Kickstarters for miniature stuff is at least $100, right? It's hard to get out of there without spending that much.
Yeah.
I think that's fair to say. And while I do understand that, I mean, at what point, do you just accept that you spent money on something that was never guaranteed in the first place? You know, there's that little disclaimer at the bottom of every Kickstarter, you know, what challenges could we face? And we all just kind of, you know, ignore it on principle. But technically speaking, we're giving them money for something that doesn't exist in the hopes that we get something in return.
And without guarantee.
That's right. So it's a slippery slope, you know. And I've met the owner of Soda Pop before.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Multiple times.
Yeah, I know you have. And he's a very nice guy. I'm trying to remember his name. Is it John?
No. Yep. John
Kennedy. Yeah, it is. Okay. It is. Okay. I had a long discussion with him at an Adepticon a couple years ago. And it was actually just after the Relic Knights fiasco.
Yeah, the first edition, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was not necessarily the most kind and or diplomatic person. I wasn't yelling at him about anything because... you know, I paid a little bit of money, got a lot of miniatures out of it. Some of them were pretty ugly, but you know what? For the price I paid, I can't really complain. But it wasn't what we were promised. We were just discussing it. I was trying not to be a crazy, you know, rabid consumer. I work in retail, so I know what they're like. I didn't want to try to corner him and, you know, and lambaste him. That wasn't my goal. And we had a great discussion about it and, you know, about the materials they chose and why they chose them and kind of what went wrong. And he seemed like a very, I don't know if you can say this thing, a sympathetic kind of guy, like just a nice guy doing his best to try to make a product that people will like. And, you know. So I find it harsh now. We're so critical about everyone who's doing Kickstarter. We're all jaded. This is about the point where Mark Maxey is listening and faints. Because every time he mentions anything about Soda Pop when I'm around, he points out, yeah, I know how you feel about this, so, you know, no need to bring it up. He actually did that in his class last year at Adepticon, because we were talking about, or he was talking about some Soda Pop miniatures, And I was going to say something. I don't remember what I was going to say. I don't think it was anything negative because I wouldn't, you know, his classroom is not the platform to start trash talking anything, right? And before I could even get the word out of my mouth, he's like, I know how you feel, Paul. We don't need to discuss it here. Like, it was like, it made me chuckle. Yeah, like I said, I don't think anyone goes into this business with the intent of screwing anyone over. The industry is so small. Like, and let's face it, you're not making so much money. You're not running away with millions here, right?
Oh, no.
Well, unless you're Cool Mini or not, in theory, you could run away with millions. But yeah. That's not the vast majority of miniature gaming Kickstarters.
No, they're the exception, not the rule.
Yeah. You know, look at Kingdom Death. I was so surprised that Kingdom Death ever launched. And again, not because of any lack of belief in the guy's integrity or anything like that. Just he encountered so many problems. And shipping was way more than he expected. And like there was just all kinds of delays. And you know, he got it all out. And I think it was at his expense. And I don't think it was cheap. I seem to recall reading somewhere like him making choices of shipping product or eating, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, when I see stuff like that, it's easy to, you know, that kind of strikes a chord and it reminds me that, you know, Kickstarter is not always the easy money solution we think it is.
No.
Just because the CMONs of the world make it look easy to rake in millions of dollars. Yeah, let's not forget that they're giant corporations in this industry anyway, and that they've got all kinds of experience in running these Kickstarters now, right? They have established supply chains and, you know, they know what they're doing. You know, small guy comes in and tries to get this started. You know, it's not the same thing. And when I see stuff like, Panda Cult, right? With their game that's supposed to be coming out. And I'm totally looking forward to that. And, you know, they're on track and they're, you know, because of their contacts in the industry, because, you know, Jonathan worked for CMON and he had all kinds of previous knowledge, you know, they tried to prepare. But it could have just easily been them as it was Durgan, right?
Yep.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to playing me some...
Wonder.
Yeah.
Did you try it?
No.
You were in the table too, right?
No, we kept talking about me trying it, but they're always so busy. No, I try to support them at every show. I'll be honest, I've never... So, Jonathan and... Oh my god, I can't remember his name.
Heath.
It's Heath or Keith? Heath, right?
Heath.
Yeah. Super nice guys, and I buy product at every show I see them at, just as a way to support them.
Yeah, did you ever paint any of the medals you bought?
Nope. I even bought it last time I saw them at EVCON, and I had pre-ordered a bust over the internet with them. Like, when they said they were going to have a bust there, I'm like,
yes. Okay. Yeah, Mary Fixon.
Yeah, and her robot, whatever his name is. So I've got that bust, and it's in a box. I cleaned up a little bit of the crazy mold lines that I had on it. And that was a case of, again, their caster at the last minute said they couldn't do the job.
Yeah, I remember that story.
So they went through another caster who was not known for his quality. And he did, considering who it is that cast it, he did pretty well. And I don't regret that purchase. I think it was reasonably priced for what it is. But I like supporting them, right? And they also have their miniature monthly
Patreon.
Painting Patreon. And I have never watched a single video or anything from it. But I've been paying for 2 years, you know, just as a way to support them because they're my friends. I have no idea where I was going with all that, by the way.
Me neither.
Yeah, no, I was going somewhere, but I lost my train of thought. I think it was just to show that, you know, people that I know have, you know, superb integrity, and they could still have encountered problems and still been in a similar state to what Soda Pop has, you know. And then it's a much smaller scale company that, I, you know, it's more, I know more personally, and even they could have had these problems. So I think it's important to realize that not every Kickstarter is cut from the same cloth. And even if people plan well, shit happens. And it's not necessarily anyone's fault. Well, Well, it's someone's fault. But
not always the creators.
Yeah, not always the creators, and not necessarily inside their control.
Yeah.
Because a lot of these things, let's not forget, too, and this is going to sound terrible, maybe, but dealing with anything sourced in Asia is really challenging, because unless you can afford to go to the factory and see your products being produced, and then inspecting them beforehand, before they're shipped, mm-hmm. you never know what you're going to get. Having dealt the source products in Asia before, you know, they'll send you samples, but that's not necessarily indicative of what you get at the end. We had whole containers of products show up that, you know, weren't in the right packaging, weren't even product we ordered. Like, they'd given us other products by mistake. And their solution to that was, well, next time you order a container worth of stuff from us, we'll fix it.
You don't order that amount very often.
Yeah. Well, if you think about it, it was, we're talking products that are less than a dollar each, and it was 28,000 US.
Wow.
So it was like a lot of crap. Anyway, but that was their solution, you know. Next time, and even big companies, again, same idea where there was a balance owed to us of like $26,000. And their solution was, okay, well, we'll credit you on future orders, but you can't use more than 10% of it at a time.
Whoa.
So, it's like, well, hold on, you have 26K of our money, but, you know, you only let me spend 2,600 at a time. Plus, I have to meet the minimum order, which was, I think, 15K. So, and you're completely at their mercy, because what are you going to do? Hop on a plane, go to Asia, shake someone down for the money they owe you? Like, yeah, that's just the way it is. It is really tough. I mean, even companies like Steamforge, who are not huge, but are bigger than some gaming companies, they've been plagued with issues for their production in Asia.
Yeah.
You know, they try to make it right, and they try to take care of their customers, but it's not always easy. You do what you can. All right, I think I'm done diatribing now.
So, how does that make you feel about Kickstarters in general? Like, is it something because of that you don't want to support? Is it something that you still support, but you're more wary and do more research? Has it changed how you view and use it?
No, I'll be honest, I don't think it has. I was always fairly conservative in my Kickstarter purchases. Not because I didn't trust Kickstarter, but because I already have so much stuff.
Mm.
You know, how many miniatures do I need, right? That's what it boils down to.
Yeah.
And for a while, like everyone, I went crazy. When Kickstarters first started, and you know, we were getting 8 million miniatures for the price of 14 miniatures. Until everyone realized that was untenable, long-term. I mean, look at that first Reaper Bones Kickstarter.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was insane.
Don't you have miniatures waiting from a Bones Kickstarter? Or did you forget to fill the miniature for that? Or?
No, there should be... Whatever happened to those? That's a good question, because, well, I didn't have any miniatures in that order. I had paint... I had miniatures for you, actually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Nestlings.
Yeah. That was years ago.
Yeah, that Kickstarter failed. So, something went wrong somewhere. I will look into
that's
that.
That's another topic. Yeah, that's something. For people who do have Kickstarter, that's something that I'm on a bunch of Kickstarter forums and description groups, and so many people don't follow up on their I'm going to say order, but under pledge. They don't answer messages. They don't fill out the pledge manager or the pledge survey. Like, so something that happens to that, like, the creators want to fulfill, but they can't because they're missing basic information that the pledgers don't answer. That happens often.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I know you've had problems getting some of Kickstarter emails, so for one reason or another, they went into true specific filter or something in the past. So
Yeah, that was the secret weapon Kickstarter when I backed their Tablescapes line. I could not get any of their emails to save my life. No matter what I did, whitelist, blacklist, it didn't care. They weren't coming.
Yeah. So some people just because of that don't get their stuff, but that stuff has to wait and be put aside by the creators until that's resolved.
Yeah. And that was just funny because Justin is a friend of mine, so it was my buddy's Kickstarter, and there was nothing I could do to make his emails come through. Yeah, and I've had that problem with other Kickstarters, too. I always end up having to look like through spam folders and stuff, trying to figure out what happened to the Kickstarter.
I think that's one of the ones you never got the update was the Relic Knight Kickstarter, the first edition one. Like, I was sharing the updates with you, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, I think so.
Like, I was the one reminding you to fill out your pledge and stuff like that.
Yeah, luckily, that was a fairly easy one for me, because I just did one of the basic pledges.
Mm-hmm. Well, you still had to pick the factions.
Yep.
But yeah. So it has not changed really that much what you think of it.
No. I just try to remind myself now that, my daughter came home with an expression from daycare. You get what you get and you don't get upset. And I don't really understand the context because that seems like a very bad thing to teach kids. That just accept whatever you get, and, but whatever. But it totally applies to the situation with Kickstarter. Like, you get what you get and you don't get upset because you're backing something. It's totally unknown. It just, No, you don't think it's accurate?
Yeah. I just find it funny in the kindergarten context.
Not even kindergarten, right? It's daycare.
Yeah,
it's
daycare. That's true.
She's not even in kindergarten. She's 4. But you get what you get and you don't get upset.
Yeah.
I think it was in the context of sharing toys or something in the daycare. But, because everyone wants that same toy. Especially when they're dealing with my daughter. Who I walked in the other day and she was in timeout because she's nearly lopped off some kid's hands in a refrigerator. Well, a toy refrigerator. But she'd put a bunch of stuff in the refrigerator pretending it was food, and the other kids wanted to play with the toys, and she was guarding the fridge. And when one kid opened the fridge door, she literally charged the door and slammed her body into it to like... Luckily, no one was hurt, and my daughter was in timeout, and she was very miffed about this. So I arrived, she's sitting there in timeout, and she is not happy looking. And I'm like, what's going on? What did she do? Because my kid is really good, but occasionally she has a temper, and I know it. So I'm not one of those parents like, my kid would never do anything wrong, because I know better. But yeah. My kids' daycare adventures have nothing to do with the topic, though, so let's... I'm really good at sidetracking.
Yeah.
We could have a show of nothing but my sidetracks.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, we've probably done that.
Yeah. On my side, I've been... I have a bunch of... a bunch. I have some Kickstarter right now that are waiting for fulfillment, and have been for some time. But I've had others that went really well, and from all size of creators, just almost by default, I usually only go for smaller creators, like people like I like the idea of their
like projects.
I like the concepts, and I want to see the project comes to life, and they're using Kickstarter kind of like the original ideas. They don't have the money. They're smaller companies. So if they don't go through Kickstarter, most probably their project just wouldn't exist. And I like backing those. And you get what you pay for in some of them. Like, you go for smaller creators, sometimes they come, the quality is not exactly there, but it's fun seeing what they can get and what they can create. You just back knowing that, and don't put too much in it.
Yeah. Reasonable expectations, right?
Yeah. And also, I want to run a Kickstarter myself, and I'm one of those really tiny home operations, so I think I probably have not a prejudice, but
like, you're invested in the idea of Kickstarter working?
Yeah. So I'm happy to be stay positive about it and wish that it continues to work. But I'm also a positive guy in general, so.
Yes, you are.
I keep faith. Like, even some of the projects we mentioned, some of the projects by Soda Pops. I'm on one of those late projects, and.
Well, you're Super Dungeon Legends, right?
No, that one I follow, but I didn't back for. I'm on a Relic Knight 2nd Edition. That probably has more chance of at least getting its first wave out before Support Engine Legions. So, at least there's that. But I've had smaller projects that took really a long time to come or almost didn't exist. I have a big project that did the same thing. But I also got some super cool stuff that I'm happy to have helped, and I won't stop. Like, I don't mind that big companies are using it, and they're there and people can pledge on it, but most of the time I still continue to go for the smaller ones, and I'm happy to do it, and I'm happy that the Kickstarter platform allows both. I think it's harder for the smaller ones now, because of the expectations, as you mentioned, but they can still do it. They have to do more work before in preparation for the campaigns. You can no longer just have a couple drawings and hope for the Kickstarter to be funded just on your idea. But,
yeah, which is kind of a shame, but...
Yeah. But at least it's still possible.
Yeah. That's true. All right. Is there anything else you'd like to add, Antoine?
Not about this discussion on Kickstarter.
No, I meant on the main topic.
Yeah, that's a good...
I know we're talking about Kickstarter. I know there's a couple Kickstarters we want to mention. I think the big takeaway is just, Kickstarter, you're not paying for anything. You're pledging your support for an idea to try to get it funded. Some ideas will fail. That money you put in the Kickstarter, you have to consider a loss when you do it. And if you get something out of it, then great.
Yeah, and pledge accordingly.
Yeah, if you can't afford to lose that $100 you're pledging, then don't pledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you're not, you can't afford to wait that long, like, most board game projects are not that long, but miniature projects usually have a really long production time. Like that.
That is true.
Not in months, but in years. So, Can you have money tied up that long in a project that you might not even get? If the answer is no, don't pledge and hope that it's going to get to retail and you can get it then.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at look back to Panda Cult, right? Their Wander game, they were the exception, not the rule. They had so much stuff done ahead of time before they went to Kickstarter, because of all their industry contacts.
Yes,
like, they're a small company, but that Kickstarter was not run like a small company Kickstarter, right?
No.
And Jonathan's one of the creative guys who does a lot of Kickstarter videos for like CMON or whatever. So, like, the production quality of everything was so high.
Yeah, and Eat has been an illustrator for multiple big companies.
Yeah, he's worked for Mantic. He's worked for others, too. I can only think of Mantic at the moment, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's
under them while they were going like multiple.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Even was their artistic director for a while.
Yeah, that was like early day stuff from him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, a lot of what he's done since is far superior to what he did with On the Lam, but everyone starts somewhere, right?
Yep.
So again, I lost my train of thought. Well, I'm bad tonight. Yeah. So yeah, basically pledge accordingly. Don't risk more than you can afford to risk, and just accept that you're leaving yourself in the hands of fate and hope for the best. All right. So that finishes our main topic.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we talk now
about Kickstarter our buddy, again.
Seppi. Yep.
Yeah, Seppi. So Seppi Jung from, what's the name of his company? Fight in a Box Games is running a Kickstarter right now for a game we both tried at Captain Con in February. Processing, a game of serving humanity.
It was awesome.
Yeah. This is not a miniature game, even if we usually are miniature centric. This is a board game. And it was fun.
Well, it's, we played it's more a prototype. Of a party game.
Yeah, it's more of a party game, yeah, for sure. Or a quick, maybe not filler. I think it's more intense than that, but...
I think it kind of like Munchkin,
yeah.
Right? Like that style of engagement, that level of engagement, with that level of screwing over your other players.
Yeah, to just give people an idea, the promo. Aliens have conquered the Earth using twisted democracy, determine which survivors are either freed, probed, or processed. So you are working for all universiers and you're trying to determine if people and or cow, because the aliens can't really make the difference between both, and who's going to be probed, processed for meat, or freed. And depending on each of the overseer agenda, you try to make some more points, get some deals with your other players, backstab them, and get their own people and cows eaten when they don't want, or probed when they don't want, whichever one works for you best.
Yeah, it was a fun game. There's no real time or reason to go into the rules here, but it's like 5 minutes to learn. It took about half an hour, maybe 40 minutes to play. And it was probably the most fun I had at Captain Con, in terms of games.
Yeah, it was up there for me too.
Like, it's just so, yeah, over the top. I mean, how many times did we chant probe the cow that weekend?
Oh, we continued. This was the first game we played over the weekend, right?
Yeah, we walked in and Seppi like cornered us and was like, come play us now.
Yeah, and we continued chanting it the whole weekend, even on the way back.
Like every time we saw Seppi in the hallway, like, yeah. Probe the cow.
Yeah. So
and Seppi is so high energy. He is infectiously high energy. And there's some cool pledges too in the Kickstarter, because you can pledge and get special editions. I don't know if there are any available still, but you get special editions of his previous games, because he made another game called Squirrel or Die, which was a fun, simple game. But you can get like a deluxe, like acrylic version of it through the Kickstarter.
Yeah, with the...
Because he works with Muson Minis to make stuff.
So. Yeah, with the processing team laid over the Squirrel Dog game.
Yep.
Yeah, I think there are some available still. The project is right on the verge of funding. He's looking for $12,500, and he's just over $12,000. So he's missing like $300 or something by the time of our recording. When we release, he's going to have 3 weeks left to go. So
it should fund.
It should be funded by, well, it should reach its funding level by the time we release, I hope. And it should just be a stretch goal galore after that.
Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. what type of stretch goals he has in mind?
Upgrade tokens to wood instead of cardboard. Get some painted ones. There's a list of the early stretch goals. Upgrade the vault tokens to wooden square or with the art. Upgrade the artwork on them, stuff like that.
Oh, okay.
And you also have social stretch goals, like number of shares, either on Facebook, Twitter, and other. So, shares, likes, followers. So, those are starting to unlock too.
Yeah, the game is so worth checking out, people. It's, I think it was about $40, if I'm not mistaken.
The basic pledge is 30 US, so that's about $40 Canadian.
Yeah, plus shipping and stuff, whatever.
Yeah, for always. Sure. That's standard.
Well, yeah, we think of it, but some people, you know, the obvious isn't so obvious, so I always like to mention.
Yeah.
You have to understand, I work in retail.
Mm. You see all kinds.
Yes. Yes, I do.
Yeah. So if you're into fun in general, take a look. Yeah.
Okay, if you're into fun in general. And if you're not, well, you shouldn't be listening to our show anyway. We don't want you. You're not our type of people.
Yeah. They might not find us fun anyway, so.
Well, yeah.
No place for them. And that's it for what I wanted to talk about this week. I think ran long enough anyway.
Okay, I see. I see there was another topic that is now gone. Or another, yes. Excellent. Okay, well, then I guess we'll call it quits. I ended up working on a Space Marine. After all that, I have nothing to work on. and my audio unboxing. I ended up working on a Imperial Fist Kill Team Marine.
Oh, so you did work on that one. Okay.
Yeah, he really should have been matte varnished before I started this. Because it's hard to do anything on a slippery, like, snot surface with a paintbrush.
Mm-hmm.
Where your only water to cleanse the brush is your spit because you forgot your cup. Or the cup you have is so filled with dirty water that it's not really working. And you're trying to paint white and your water and your brush is brown.
Mm.
Yeah.
Thank God. Perfect setup.
Thank God Privateer Press paints are non-toxic. That's all I'm going to say. Now I have to go wash my face before my wife sees me. Because, you know, she'll be like, what's all that around your mouth?
Mm-hmm.
Don't worry, it's just white paint. Why are you eating white paint? It's an important part of the painting process.
That's a question that I've had more than once. So
you've had that conversation more than once with your wife?
So.
Is it really necessary? Yes, shut up.
I don't think I've used that tone, but...
Like, obviously. Like, why do you think I'm doing it? What, you don't tell your wife to shut up? Come on, Antoine. Live a little. No, don't do that.
I think that the little is...
You'll live a little, all
right. You're right. I won't live long.
All right, man. Well, I will see you next week, where hopefully I'll have an actual project to do. And, yeah, we'll have more interesting things to talk about.
That's good.
Okay, talk to you then.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine at Eltonio Berg, Steve at B_Steve, and if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by La Drave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out United Geeks Network Family Member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to UnitedGeeksNetwork.com, where you will find Who, What, Why, a game design podcast. A podcast that talks about the ins and outs of game design with game designers. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at UnitedGeeksNetwork.com.